You are listening to the podcast When Life Gives You Lemons, presented by me, Emma Levy. Having worked with elite athletes for most of my career, it's always intrigued me that a significant number of high-performing individuals have encountered some form of adversity earlier in their lifetime. My fascination into this grew when I had my own brush with adversity, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in May 2020 in the midst of the global pandemic at the age of only 36. During this period, I questioned whether it was my positive mindset or maybe something deeper, which enabled me to bounce back and to train and compete for a triathlon just 1 month following completion of all active cancer treatment. The goal of this podcast is to explore this concept further by meeting a variety of high-performing individuals who have experienced adversity, but who have come back stronger. Today, I'm welcoming Sara Davison to the podcast. Sara is best known as the Divorce Coach. She is a multi-award-winning coach, twice best-selling author, and podcast host of Heartbreak to Happiness. Sara is also a global media commentator for TV and radio on breakups, divorce, and domestic abuse. Interestingly, Sara's interest and expertise in this area was born out of her own marriage breakdown and the trauma that that life event brought with it. Following the launch of Sara's breakup and divorce coach practitioner accreditation programs in 2018, Sara founded the International Divorce Coach Center of Excellence, which now has a coaching community of over 450 coaches spanning 23 countries and 5 continents. Sara's coaching hub is the leading global provider of breakup, divorce, and domestic abuse coaching support for businesses of all sizes as part of their employee well-being program. Wow. Sara, thank you for chatting to us today. So all of that success I just listed, that came out of your own marriage breakdown, didn't it?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be here with you today. Yeah, it all came about because I went through my own divorce and it came as a complete shock. I didn't see it coming and it absolutely hit me like a freight train out of the blue. So yeah, that doesn't mean to say I didn't know there were problems in the relationship. There were some issues, but for me, I always believed that marriage was forever. I wasn't someone that would get divorced. I really believed I'd met my soulmate. Our son was only one at the time. We had a global business together as well. So we had an office in London and an office in Sydney with nearly 200 staff around the world. So it wasn't like I was going anywhere. And things were going well, you know, as far as the business and life, I was enjoying it. And then literally overnight, I found out that not only did he not want to be married to me anymore, but he was madly in love with somebody else. Absolutely devastating for me, because especially if you don't see it coming, if you have an inkling something's not going well and someone might leave, I think, yeah, in some cases you can sort of come to terms with it. But literally overnight, my whole world changed. So, you know, I lost who I thought was my soulmate, the father to my son, sort of working together with that, then also my business partner as well. So my whole identity was wrapped up in the relationship and work and everything, you know, being a mom and a dad together. So yeah, it was absolutely devastating. And I think that was a really pivotal moment for me in my life. Everything changed. It doesn't help. Well, it didn't help me at the time that she was 12 years younger than me. Ooh. That never helps, Emma. Just doesn't help. She was stunningly beautiful. That also never really helps. And then I found out a couple of months later that she was actually pregnant as well. So that was incredibly difficult for me. And a lot of my staff knew about it before I did. So again, there was a lot of humiliation, embarrassment. And I spent a lot of time doing that ugly crying on the bathroom floor, calling my mom at 2 a.m., panicking, saying, oh my goodness, I can't cope. What am I going to do? Learning to be a single mom overnight, I think, was also really scary. And just not knowing what the future held for me, because I thought I had my life pretty much sorted at that point. So it was a real kind of U-turn in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it makes much of a difference, but just out of interest, did you catch him or did he tell you?
No, it's a funny story, actually. It's actually in my book, Uncoupling. So I was in our Australia office for a week with my son, and I came back to the house and he usually would come and pick me up from the airport, but he didn't come. And I got back to the house and I thought, best way for me in those days to get over jet lag was just to get to the gym. So I'd had this really long journey. So I got back and thought, right, I'm going to go to the gym. So I went to my bedside drawer table to get my lip balm to sort of go, right, that's one of my lip balm into the gym. And in that drawer was a contact lens box. Now, I don't wear contact lenses. And so I was like, oh, what's that? Opened it up and there was a large false eyelash in there. And this was on my side of the bed, which was against the window side. So you wouldn't go there unless you were sleeping there. And that's when I started to think, what is going on here? So that's how I discovered the affair. I didn't talk to anyone about it though. And it's really normal for anyone listening or watching. I didn't tell anyone. The only thing I did was I phoned my PA because she worked from my apartment sometimes. And my nanny and said, do you wear contact lenses? And both of them went, no, we don't. They've been with me for years at this point. I was like, no. And they were like, why? I was like, nothing. And I actually went to the gym and my friend was training with me and I started throwing up, like retching on the treadmill. And I was obviously in shock. And she said, oh, you're not well, go home. You shouldn't be training. And that's when it started to dawn on me, I think. But I didn't actually voice it to anyone for quite a while.
So did you confront him after a period of time?
He actually went away on a business trip, which is when I started to find more evidence. And when I'd found that, yeah, I actually just went to a lawyer when I realised the extent of everything. And they sent him an email just saying, your wife is divorcing you. I was like, oh, wow. I just needed to find a way to take my power back, which is really interesting, actually, because sometimes when the statistics show, which recently have shown that less women are filing for divorce, and the Office of National Statistics was quoted in, I think it was the Telegraph, and they asked me to comment as well, because the comment from the Office of National Statistics was, well, obviously men are doing better in marriage because less women are filing for divorce. But actually, I think it's a lot to do with the cost of living crisis, because even if you do file for divorce, it doesn't mean you want to initiate the divorce. I felt like I was backed into a corner, and everything I'd found out by this stage showed me this had been going on for a very long time. And I felt like a complete idiot. And the only way to just start to rebuild myself was to go, I need to take massive action. Because for me, it was black and white. If you cheat, you're out. I mean, that I know there was too much evidence to go back for me. It's not always the same for everybody. Some people, you can work on it and get it back on track. I'm not saying it's the only way. But for me, in that moment, I was like, oh, absolutely, this is totally unacceptable behavior. So I was out. So
you were out. And did it massively affect your self-esteem at the beginning? And did it kind of make you question what you did wrong?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a really good question, because people look at me now and go, oh, well, it's easy for you, Sarah, because you're confident and you know, you can talk about these things. I couldn't. You know, I was an absolute shell of the person I am today. You know, I was broken. I was crying all the time. I still hadn't lost my baby weight, so I was a lot bigger, although the divorce diet is a great way to drop a couple of dress sizes very quickly, I discovered. But I mean, those things, yeah, I mean, I was a shell, but I did a lot of that crying, the ugly crying I mentioned. But I'd actually gone back to Australia and to the office, and I to work for a while. And I remember the pivotal moment was when, it's been a couple of months after I'd found the contact lens, I'd gone for a walk down Balmoral Beach in Sydney, which is absolutely beautiful for anyone that knows. It's white sand, beautiful sea, cockatoos flying down, big white cockatoos, like they're sparrows over there. Like they're everywhere and they're so stunning. And I went and sat on the beach on my own, and I was so hurting from all the information I'd found out and what was going on. I just found out she was pregnant. And I thought, you know what, this pain, this suffering, it cannot just be for me to endure and drag myself through this hideous, because it already had got very difficult with very aggressive lawyers employed. It was just alien to me. I was like, it's got to be something that I learn from. And then I figure out the best way through this, and then I can help other people. Because if it just stops with me, then I just have to go all through this pain for what meaning? Like, this has to happen to me for a reason. And that's when my mission was actually born on that beach, that beautiful sunny day, was that I was going to make it my mission to help people all over the world to cope better with any kind of breakup, separation or divorce, coming out of toxic relationships, you know, difficult relationships, because I just wish that's what I'd had in that moment. And there was no way forward. I mean, there wasn't anything really out there. A few bits of information out there, but nothing specific to what I was dealing with and the journey that I was dragged through. So that's when I combined my coaching skills, because I'd been a coach at that point for about 15 years. So I wanted to combine that experience, create tools and techniques, because I knew it didn't have to be hell. I could change the way I was feeling, but I was struggling to do it. So that's what I created. I combined the coaching skills with the divorce experience and the emotional roller coaster to create the steps and the plans and the tools that I now share with people all over the world.
Yeah. So you were a coach already, weren't you? You just said you'd been a coach for 15 years. So you had the, like you said, you had the tools and you probably knew what you had to do. So how did you switch that to, you know, it's like being given the tools, but how did you know how to use those tools and how did you get yourself out of that deep, dark place?
Yeah. And that's such a good question, because you can learn coaching tools, but actually applying them to how to cope when you have to show up at the office and your husband's pregnant girlfriend is there in front of the whole team that you've worked with and managed for years, and she looks absolutely stunning. You feel frumpy, you're falling apart, and they're madly in love, and that's just for everyone to see. How do you cope with that? That's pretty hard to deal with, to be honest, with a baby in tow. So, I mean, it did take me a while, and I tried and tested everything. You know, I would try, you know, the tools that I thought might work, and then I tweak them and I adjusted them. And so that's how I know that these tools actually work, because I used them on me first when I was in just the most horrendous amount of pain. So I figured if they can work for me, then hopefully they can work for others. So I really just pulled in all my knowledge. Like, first of all, getting a good team of people around me was really important. And some of your friends are great friends because they're angry with you and they hate them for you. And they're just as upset and maybe feel just as betrayed as you do. Sometimes they're not the best friends to spend too much time with, though, because that kind of pours fuel on the fire in a way. So finding the friends that would give me more constructive advice, the family members that would just be there for me and were solid, I was lucky to have that. But that was one of the core things. But then the team that could answer the questions, because the legal process, and I hope, you know, I don't know if anyone listening is going through that right now, it makes you feel like an idiot, even when you don't think you are an idiot. You might be very well educated, but because the legal system is so much jargon, you know, even referring to like a barrister, what is a barrister and a lawyer, or what's an FDR, or all the different things, and a Form E. I didn't know what they were. And so that didn't help. And when your confidence is low anyway, you sort of hand over all your authority to a lawyer because you think, well, they must know best. But sometimes that's not always the best way to go about things. So I think I started by looking at what I needed and then developed the tools around that and then tested and tested and tested and tweaked and then implemented. So that's kind of how it all grew.
Yeah. And I've heard you say on another podcast that it was a Tony Robbins event that changed your life initially. Is that right? So that's what made you want to get into life coaching?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where when I was at school, I just wasn't the most intelligent, definitely wasn't the most popular. And I was sort of brought up to believe that however you do at school is how it's going to be a reflection on later life. So I wasn't a prefect at school. I never selected for anything, even though I really wanted to be. And I was one of those sort of goody-goody two-shoes. I'll have my hand up and they go, no, not you, Sarah. We'll take, you know, somebody else. And I always just assumed that I wouldn't really do much in my world. Until I went to a Tony Robbins seminar. For those people who don't know who he is, he's probably the leading coach in the world for transformations. And, you know, he's very American. And I love everything about Tony's work and what he does. I know some people do find it a little bit, American maybe. But I went and it absolutely took the blinkers off my little world where I could be whatever I wanted to be. His message is you can create the life you want to live. So dream big and step up. Now you can't just sit there and, you know, dream it, you have to take massive action. But I'm a doer. So I was like, well, okay, well, just give me some pointers and I'm off. And literally within 12 months of attending my first Tony Robbins seminar, which was a long time ago now, about 3 decades ago, I had bought my first apartment. I had set up my first business and we turned over just under £1 million in my first year. And I was very young. I was 22, I think, at that point.
That's very young.
So it completely changed my life as to what is possible from somebody like me, when my self-esteem was, I was okay, but I was never going to be able to do the things I truly dreamed about doing. So that was, as you said, a really important blinkers off moment for me, which I think, well, 100% changed the trajectory of my life. But Tony's work is amazing, but it's also what you do about it as an individual. Like, how do you take the tools on? How do you apply them? Because sitting there sort of manifesting and doing nothing doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think I've heard Tony as well say, you know, we can choose how we react to situations, isn't it? And it's trauma's not what occurs, but it's actually how we react to it. And so do you remember having that in your head when you were going through your own trauma?
Absolutely. When I was sat on that beach, actually, in Balmoral Beach, that was one of the things I was like, I know that I don't have to feel this way and it doesn't have to destroy me. Although at that point, it was the only option I could see because I was destroyed, devastated at the time. So for me, it was very much, I know it doesn't have to be this way, but I'm not sure how to do anything else about it. So I'm going to have to put in the work, the hard graft, create the tools because I can't find them out. I researched and I couldn't find anything that was specific enough to help me. So that's where it began, really. It was like out of necessity. It was, you know, step up or this is the rest of your life, which just to me was not going to be an option. And actually on that beach, that's where my motto was born. Screw you. Watch this. And from that moment on, I was like, taking my power back.
Yeah. And it's it's about not looking backwards as well, isn't it? And it's looking forwards. Because the reason why I say that is a good friend of mine is just going through a divorce and was telling me that her first session at the psychologist said. It was like, stop looking back and just look forwards. And how can you make things positive? And I really like that advice.
Yeah. Yeah, and the interesting thing when I see clients and when I train my coaches to coach clients is that you wouldn't leave your house in the morning without knowing where you were going because it would be very hard to get there. And even if you did, you wouldn't know you were there, right? So, but that's why we stay stuck during a breakup because the future either looks like a blank canvas or a black hole for a lot of people. And it's about working out which one is it for you. Is it a blank canvas, in which case we need to throw a lot of color on there to give you options and something to shift your focus to move towards? Or if it's a black hole, that's okay too, but let's shine a light into that black hole so that you can see the way forward and let's put some steps to get you there and what that looks like. Bring it to life so that people have something to move towards. Otherwise, you stay where you are. And that was one of the learnings for me. It's like, I don't know what my future looks like. I've lost my husband. Probably I've lost my business now because I won't be able to stay. You know, who am I? What am I? Where am I going? What does my life look like? I'm going to have to move home. So everything was down to ground zero again. So it was, okay, for me, it was a blank canvas and it was like, let's throw as much color on. And even if some of those things don't work out, you'll learn a lot on the way towards them, which will help you find things that do light you up and do get you excited, truly excited about what the future holds.
And, you know, you had the tools, but you didn't know how to use them. And now you've had that life experience, do you think you are now a better coach than when you were 22 years old because you've been through that life experience?
Yeah. I'm a better coach. I think it comes from a different place, right? Because I've walked in those shoes and I absolutely 100% understand why sometimes, you know, you think you should be moving forward, but you're actually going backwards. It's things that other people outside will go, come on, it's 6 months now. You must be a bit further down the line from this. But it's understanding that it is a roller coaster. And sometimes there are going to be times where you just feel like you're doing loop the loop and never really moving forward. And that's okay, because that is part of the healing process. It is the loss cycle. It is going through that pain. So, yeah, I think I think the feedback I get from clients and the feedback that my coaches get from clients, those people that have been through difficult divorces, is that people love the fact that they get it because they've been there. It's not the only requisite, I think, that makes you a great coach. I think the most important thing, actually, is that you walk your talk. I think that integrity is really important, and that it is super important to not just suggest ideas and work with clients, but to be using the tools yourself as well. And so that's how you get to be an outstanding coach, in my opinion, is that you truly are aligned with everything you're talking about. And doesn't mean you're perfect, doesn't mean you're this perfected robot who never gets upset, but you use the tools to pick yourself back up when those things happen and you're doing the things that you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm really interested in this because a lot of the people I talk to, you know, we talk about growth mindset and how people move forward after they've been through trauma. And, you know, I've had a few guests say, I wish that other people didn't have to go through that trauma to get to where they are today. But sometimes it's very hard to make people understand, you know, how to get there if they haven't been through those difficult times. And I wonder if you feel the same. Like, do you feel like you've grown following what you've been through?
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that it's a difficult thing. Well, it's easy for me to say now, but I could never have said this before. But the tough times in life, and that was one of them. And since then, there's been others. Seriously difficult times. And I think they are the greatest gifts that I've had, because I have the mindset to turn that into something that I learn from. And then I use that to go out there and help other people. That's my therapy. That's my recovery. That's my healing. That's how I do it for me. So I kind of, at the time, obviously things upset you, find things difficult, especially if you're going through the family court system. It's a very toxic place to be. And, you know, sometimes what you endure there is nothing short of state-sanctioned abuse. So that has been tough over the years for me to personally endure, and some of the people involved and the way it's done is actually mind-boggling, which is why I campaign a lot in Parliament as well to change the law. And we have changed the law on some things, which is great, but there's still a long way to go. But I think that if you can go through those times and then look back when you've healed a bit to say, right, how do I learn from this? How do I bank those lessons? How do I then take this so that I can help others? It's a way of saying, well, you can pretty much throw anything at me now because I know I can get back up. If you've been to that hellish place where you think there's no future and you can't go on, to that absolute brink, and you can pick yourself back up and carry on, it's like, okay, I have a strength now that I have earned, that I have made myself. It's all self-created. So I know that I can get through tough stuff. So when the tough stuff comes, you bounce back. I call it the boomerang effect. You bounce back a lot faster because you've been through life's tough times. So it doesn't break you. It makes you stronger. And that's really what, you know, hopefully everyone can do with those tough times.
Yeah. And you've found that coping strategy, which is brilliant. But if we kind of look at coping, why do people cope differently? You know, why were you able to find a positive coping strategy and some people can't? Do you think it's like a genetic thing? Do you think it's how we're brought up? How can we control this?
Well, first of all, I think there's hope for everyone. However dark it might seem right now, there is always a way to make it better, even if you can't see it right now. I think it's important to have that hope. But yes, I think everybody has different coping mechanisms, and when we're born, we learn our coping mechanism pretty early on in life by either watching the people around us, maybe our parents. Yeah, maybe when your mum sees a spider, she screams, you then learn, I'm afraid of spiders. Yeah, we're not born afraid of spiders. We probably touch them, put them in our mouths as a baby. But when we see other people around us reacting that way, that's how we learn. It might be that you learned from watching your parents argue, or somebody else being very difficult around you when you stood up for yourself and they shouted at you to just not stand up for yourself in difficult scenarios. So we all have strategies we learn for coping with things. Some of them are successful and some of them really work, and some of them are not so successful, maybe even damaging, maybe like drinking or turning to drugs, those sort of things, or maybe just closing down on the world or beating ourselves up with our own internal voices, a lot of these are learned from environment. And I think one of the things that, you know, I share as part of my toolkit with clients is how to take your power back and how to choose how you react and how you can actually dial down those negative emotions yourself. So it doesn't matter what people do to you. In fact, it's not what happens to you in life that defines you, as you well know, Emma. It's what you do about it that makes you the person you are. And that comes down to that moment of choice of, yes, this is not right, or this is unkind, or it's natural that I feel devastated, hurt, suicidal, whatever those thoughts might be. And now, how do I choose to react? And what can I do to make those shifts? And I think everybody is born, like some people will be able to cope really well with huge amounts of stress, and other people will fall apart at the tiniest thing. And so if you're going through something like a breakup or divorce on top of that, that will obviously, you have to take that into account. But it doesn't matter where you are right now. What matters is that you give yourself a chance and believe that there are things you can do and start implementing them with an open mind to enable that space for them to start to work. You get that momentum, and then before you know it, you'll be up and running.
Yeah. And sometimes as well, you know, if you go through something tricky, you want to kind of curl up in a ball, don't you? And you want to forget about it. But at what point can we kind of tell people that that's not helpful? And actually, we need to face the difficulty. And it's not easy. But actually, you know, we can't heal what we don't feel, to use the words of Edith Eger, who's one of my favorite books. But yeah, at what point can you advise, you know, those people really struggling to try and get on with it and face the difficulty?
Yeah, I mean, people ask me this all the time. So when will it get better? When will the heartbreak, the heartache go? And I guess the answer is when you decide, because there will be a point where you have that choice to step up or just to carry on doing what you're doing. And at that point, that takes work, and it's not, you know, straightforward, but you can start with really small baby steps. You can start by, you know, even just getting out of the house more, or changing your body language, or not going into those learned coping mechanisms that maybe aren't as empowering as others. I mean, this is where I wish we taught this at school, Emma. This is why I wish we taught, you know, how to make friends or how to cheer yourself up in a heartbeat just by putting a smile on your face or doing 5 star jumps. It might be the last thing that you want to do, but it works. It will automatically change how you feel and dial down those negative emotions. Even if it's from a 10 out of 10 being the worst to a 9 out of 10, that will mean that you can step up and maybe drive the kids to school or do a bit of work or get dressed or something. So, and it is, you know, one step leads to another step leads to another. So yeah, it's definitely something that's really important that we don't teach enough of. If I'd have learned that instead of algebra, maybe it would have saved me a lot of heartache in the middle. Not to say that algebra isn't important for some people, but it just hasn't worked out that way for me.
So do you buy into that? Is it Mel Robbins that says stand in front of a mirror and give yourself high five every morning? Do you advise that kind of thing?
Love Mel Robbins. I mean, anyone out there who's putting positive stuff out there and tools that can give you that, you know, a bit of a different aspect, a different idea, something to try. Look, everybody is different. And what I found with clients is that some of them are really adverse to some of that more sort of physical, what they might term US American stuff. I personally love it because it smashes through our Brits, especially our comfort zones, through the other side. So I'm all for shifting your body language, but, you know, I changing the thoughts and the words. Often we beat ourselves up with our own voices, and actually our own worst enemy can be ourselves. Yeah, that's enough now, go back to bed, or you can't do this. What makes you think you can do this? Or what's wrong with you? Or why don't they love me anymore? And these are what I call hamster wheel questions, because they just take you round and round in circles and they're not helping you. So, yeah, and a lot of people stay stuck because they're saying, a lot of people say to me, oh, I just need to go and understand why. I don't have closure. And they think that going back to their ex and asking for closure will give them closure. But the interesting thing is, the person that hurt you can never heal you. So what that means is we have to find our own closure. So by looking at, for example, their lack of kindness is your closure. Their lack of accountability is the closure. The fact that they're not there for you right now is your closure. The fact that you gave them VIP access to your heart and they walked away from that, or they damaged it in some way. All these little things, or big things that in a lot of cases are the closure. So looking for what's always already there, because that enables you to take your power back. Every time we're blaming them for something or our current state because they've done this, is actually giving our power away to them and keeping us stuck. So anything we can do to take that back is going to be a life skill that you can develop in any scenario, not just to do with heartbreak and, you know, like you said, any kind of challenge in life that you overcome. It has to be down to you taking your power back and saying, okay, you might be able to upset me and do things on the outside, but you can never break me internally unless I give you that. And that's where the screw you watch this came from, because there was absolutely no way I was ever going to do that. So for me, it was like, I'm about as broken as it gets without it being a no way back. And now I need to step up, because now's the time. So it's up to you to decide when that point happens, but ask for help. You're not alone. There are things you can do, you know, and people around who can help you with that for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, all of this stuff we're talking about, it, like we said, it's all within us, and we have to be the ones to make that change. And so as a coach, you're giving people those tools. But how can you advise someone? How can you teach someone to be able to use the tools in the same way that you couldn't use them until that moment on the beach?
Yeah, because I was looking for help, though. I was looking for somebody to fix me and saying, right, where's the help here? And interestingly, back then, which is about 15 years ago, there's help for giving up smoking. There's help and support if you want to lose weight. Lots of groups, online groups, support groups, therapists, coaches, you name it, lots of them. Nothing for heartbreak. Mm. And that was something that stuck with me. I was like, how can there be nothing? Like, literally everyone on the planet goes through heartbreak, right? But we're not doing anything about it. So I guess it's a good question. When you're in that state where you just don't know what to do, for me, if I'd found the tools earlier, I would have been earlier on my journey. They just weren't there then. So that's why I created everything I wish I'd had. Even like having the podcast, or, you know, listening to your podcast, again, is inspiring. It teaches you to take your control back and that you can make a change in your own life. We're not just there as a product of what's happened to us, or is happening to us, or may well happen again. It's about making those decisions early on. And I think it doesn't need to be big things. You know, reaching in for the wine and partying, or just endless days in bed. You know, sometimes you have to go through that. It's part of the grieving process. So it's about not beating yourself up for doing things, you know, not perfectly correct all the time. But it'll get to the point where the downside outweighs the good. And that's often where people go, right, now I need help. Now I want that help. And I think the fact that there's so much help there out there now makes it a lot easier for people. And you don't have to do anything either. Just tune in, like join one of the online groups that we run, something like that. But you don't need to actually make any changes unless you're ready to. But putting yourself in that kind of community with other people who are seeing the benefit will inspire you for sure and get you moving and that ball rolling. So I think if you put yourself around people that are making, you know, are in the same situation but moving forward, that's going to inspire you without you even having to actually make that decision yourself. It will, so you'll absorb it from the communities that you hang around in.
Yeah. So it's really, I think what you're saying is, you know, you as a coach give people the tools and then they are going to be more equipped to use them. But actually there is an element of time, and to not beat yourself up in that early stages of heartbreak, because everyone has to go through that early bit, which is going to hurt.
Yeah, the early bit will help, will hurt, but the sooner you get to the tools, you can shorten that. So obviously there is unfortunately there is no magic wand to take away all the pain. That's just not a reality. What you can do is learn to take your power back to dial down the pain, and you can start doing that from day one. But there is a painful journey you go through, because you have to grieve the end of the relationship in order to heal. You can't just skip that bit and go, right, fix me now so I don't have to cry or feel the pain. Well, actually, if the way you release some of that pain is crying and going through that difficult period, we can support you through it and make it easier, because there's definitely things to stop you getting stuck or going too deep into that. and shifting your focus, as you mentioned earlier, to moving forwards as well, at the same time as giving you tools to deal with the pain right now, those combinations will speed that up. So whilst it won't eradicate it immediately, it will shorten that recovery process time for you.
Yeah. So I think your story is a really great example of when life gives you lemons. And on this podcast, I like to ask people about their resilience. Do you think you have always been a resilient person, or do you think what you went through has made you more resilient?
I think I was a people pleaser from a very young age. I think I didn't want to do anything wrong because I was scared of doing things wrong, because I always wanted to make people happy. So I would still say I'm pretty sensitive as a person. I think I still feel things. I'm highly empathetic. I pick up on energy from people around me a lot, which I have to watch, especially when you're working with big groups of people. We have to be careful with that. I'm sure you know all about that, Emma. So, yeah, I mean, I think resilience was something I learned because I had a really happy childhood. I hadn't come across toxic people. I hadn't met somebody that would lie or manipulate for their own gain, not that, knowingly anyway. And then I got into the workforce, and I think you start to definitely meet those kind of people out there. But I didn't have that as a child. And so that's another benefit for people who are worrying that they've married a toxic partner or they've been in relationships with a toxic partner. Because I had a few relationships with toxic partners before I learned my lesson and banked it. I won't be repeating that one again. But yeah, I think if you have had a, people often think, well, if you had a happy childhood, that makes for a better future. And yes, of course, there's a lot of arguments and research to back that up. But all is not lost if your child has you as a healthy parent and a toxic partner. Because what if you do it right, you can give your child the tools to turn that into what is a very valuable life lesson, so that they don't go on and make similar mistakes to the ones I did and those people listening, you know what I'm talking about, mate. So you make better choices because you learn this early on. It's like if you get that information early on, then you're better informed. And if you've got the right support and the right education and help around you, it's not about bad-mouthing the other parents, it's not about putting them down. It's just about highlighting the way and you make choices, and the way other people make choices may not be the same. Some people have empathy, some people lack that. Some people are kind, some people are just downright mean, if not verging on evil. Can you spot that? Can you hone your radar to pick up on those signs before you get suckered in with the love bombing and the gaslighting and find it too hard to get out? So again, I always see that there's a positive side to this. There always is if you look hard enough, right?
I like that. I like how you made that a positive thing. And I appreciate everyone is different. But having been through it yourself and having come out so much stronger the other side, for anyone going through a breakup, would you have any top tips to get from heartbreak to happiness?
Yes, I think first of all, it's about taking accountability back for yourself, like I said, not giving your power away. So having that moment where you say, whether it's screw you, watch this. I mean, even if it's amicable, it can still hurt, right? So it's just taking back the accountability to, okay, I'm going to do what I can to learn from this and bank the lessons, because that is what prevents this recurring and recurring in the future. So learning the lessons, first of all. Number two, having the right support team around you. Super important, because the people who are around you will directly impact the quality of your life, your thoughts, the way you're feeling. If you're with people that zap your energy or who constantly ask you about your ex, you're going to be stuck in that cycle. And what we want to do is shift your focus away from this as soon as we can and towards creating that compelling future, so that you are moving towards that. So having a team of people that can help you navigate that, whether that's friends and family, whether that's a really good advisor in the legal area or finances, anything you're worried about, get an expert on your team who can answer. You don't have to necessarily pay for it. It could be a friend that's great with spreadsheets and budgeting, or, you know, a friend who, you know, has been a lawyer in the past and can give you a bit of advice. It could be anyone, but put the right people around you, because then at least when you're having those sleepless nights or those moments where you're panicking, you've got someone to phone, and that makes a massive, massive difference. And I think the third thing is self-care is really important, and it isn't selfish. A lot of people, when they come out of relationships, especially toxic relationships, won't be used to looking after themselves. And anything that they do on themselves might feel uncomfortable, or actually I should be doing this for the kids, or I should be trying to find myself a job, or I should, and those things will be important. But it's like, if you don't put the oxygen mask on yourself on the plane, then you won't be able to help your kids, which at the beginning sounds alien to any parent, right? You think, oh no, I'd definitely help my kids first. But if you can't do something, then your kids are going to struggle too. So it's about investing, even if it's 20 minutes in the morning, going outside, looking up, taking in some natural daylight, whether it's doing a little bit of exercise, whether it's doing something that makes you laugh or nurtures you, or pampering time, you're taking a bath, whatever it is, just to feed you, because you being strong is what we need for this journey, because it is going to be a little bit of a journey. So the stronger and the stronger you can be, and the more you look after yourself, the kinder you are to you, the faster that journey can be.
Yeah, I love that term, self-care is not selfish, because for anyone that listens to this podcast, they know how important exercise is to me. And so, you know, my challenges at home with my family, when I want to go out for a long run, you can imagine, you know, the guilt from three kids and the husband say, well, what do you mean you go out for a long run? And I often say, I need to do that to make me a better mom, a better wife, a better friend.
Absolutely.
And it is, you know, it's not selfish. It is self-care, and it's important for me, but also the people around me.
Yeah. And they'll see the difference, right? Of mum when she's been for a run and mum when she hasn't. So it's true. I mean, it's the same for all of us, right? We are better when we've actually invested even a small amount of time just into ourselves. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Just picking up a little bit on what you said about the importance of a team. I can imagine that might be quite hard for some people if they have had consequences on losing some of their friends through a divorce.
Absolutely. And this is really normal as well. Expect to lose people you didn't think would ever leave your side. Expect to lose people you always thought would have your back. Expect to feel even more betrayed by that than you do by your ex at times. That, unfortunately, is part of some divorces. And actually, interestingly, it can hurt more than your partner. And because those friends, you think sometimes friends are there for life, and sometimes they're just not. So yes, if you don't have that, what I would say is, when that's happening, try not to be myopic and focus on that particular person. Open up your awareness to the people that are stepping up that you never imagined would, because there will be people on the periphery. Maybe it's someone at the school gates, or maybe it's someone that noticed you were sat. I remember I used to go shopping in this little place in London. I used to park my car in the same car park every day, and for years I've been going and happy, and then when I had my son, I'd take him as a little baby and I'd be morning. And then there was a period of time where I would still go, because it's where I used to park to get my nails done. I had this thing of having bright nails to cheer myself up through the first few years of my breakup. And I used to get out of the car and I'd be crying. And this guy that ran the car park, sweet old guy, he obviously noticed that I had been sad for the last few times. And when I came back to my car one time, there was a little box of macaroons with a "noticed you were sad" message from him. He signed it. And that, to me, made up for some of the friends that had deserted me, even though I hadn't really spoken to this guy, just, you know, the old comment here and there. But that was enough to get me through. And then when people weren't being as kind, when they hadn't stepped up, I'd always remember him. And I still, it's 15 years ago that happened, and I still talk about it because it means the world to me still to this day. So sometimes I think we can focus on those things and that makes them bigger. What we have to do is try to look at and notice the good things, because there will be some positive things happening, some things that make you feel loved. And it could be a friend that has just been out there on the periphery and not really had that much time, but they get it because maybe they've been through it, or they're more empathetic than some of your other friends. So that's okay. So if you are struggling with the support system, sorry, which was your original question, what I would say is, there are groups. That's why I set up the groups, so that you can jump on online. They're run by my accredited coaches. They're super friendly. They're less than £1 an hour to join. So you can, it's super affordable for everyone. You'll meet people from all over the world going through similar things, and you'll feel not alone. You'll find your tribe. It's just something that we put in place that will give people upbeat sessions with actual advice that will help you move forward. So you don't have to do it alone. But even if you don't want to do that, you can just reach out to the people that you are noticing And you'll see that there are people out there that can help you through. If not, talk to your GP. You know, we have the Samaritans in the UK. You know, there are helplines where people will listen. So you're never alone. It's just finding the right support for you, for sure. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that story about the macaroons, because actually it's those small acts of kindness, isn't it, that can make such a difference. And I just wish that Absolutely. We all did it a lot more, you know. Final question for you, Sarah, that I like to ask all my guests. If you could go back in time to when things were at their toughest, what do you wish you could have told yourself as you were going through that moment?
I think it would be, you've got this. It will be okay. And just giving me the, even if at the time I didn't know how, just knowing that I could get through it, is having that hope in those moments of utter darkness and despair that one day things will be okay. You can do that. And actually it's in your control. So I think going back to that, to those times and thinking, you know what, you will get through this, it will be okay. And the person that can make it better is me. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. That's, I think, the main thing I'm going to take from this chat today is, you know, it is all within us, isn't it? And we have the control to make changes. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on When Life Gives You Lemons. I think that, you know, the way you've built this multinational successful business out of your own heartbreak is, like I said at the beginning, a massive example, a great example of what the premise of this podcast is all about. And your story can inspire so many others listening. So thanks for sharing it with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I've loved every minute.
Thanks, Sarah. Another great episode today with Sarah Davison. If you like what you hear, check out her website, which is www.sarahdavison.com. And there's loads of great information on there. And if you like what you're hearing on When Life Gives You Lemons, check back in next week for another amazing, inspiring guest.